Chapter 16, The Maya Calendar and the Gateway to Intelligent Infinity. Every astronomer owes Johannes Kepler a debt of gratitude for working out the basic laws of planetary motion. Sadly, they've all abandoned his greater vision, namely that the spacing of planetary orbits in our solar system could be precisely defined by the Platonic solids. Where did he get this idea from? Was it strictly an original thought? Or had he been tipped off by the mystery schools? Just as I was finishing this book, I found solid proof from a true master of geometry that Kepler was right. The orbits of the planets do indeed hold the same three-dimensional geometric relationships that we see in the Earth's grid, in DNA and protein synthesis, and all throughout quantum mechanics, namely the Platonic solids. I was taught in school that Kepler's concept of interplanetary geometry was a hilarious wrong turn in science, and certainly had never been proven. Years later, I came to feel he might have been right, but I didn't have the proof. Then, by a seemingly random chance, I just so happened to stumble over what I was looking for. A friend handed me a book and said, "You might want to read this." And the best part was the title, A Little Book of Coincidence by John Martineau. Within minutes, I realized I'd been handed the final key I needed to unlock the mysteries of the ancients. Geometric forces in planetary orbits. I already knew there were impressive harmonic relationships in the orbits of the planets. I wrote about them extensively in all three of my earlier scientific books, which you can go back to my website and read for all the details. I also saw some compelling suggestions of a hidden geometry in the planetary orbits when I read Time Stands Still by Keith Critchlow, now considered rare and hard to find. My copy cost me $150. Critchlow's book also features stunning images of Platonic solids carved into Neolithic stone spheres that were dug up by the hundreds all throughout Scotland. Martineau's book had the final piece I was looking for. Geometry is the key to unlock the mysteries of the solar system. The planets are apparently being held in place and driven through their orbits by the same geometric forces that very likely create atoms and molecules, as well as the global grid. This, of course, makes it much more interesting to chart planetary alignments. We can now reimagine these alignments as moments when the gears in a giant invisible clock line up with geometric precision. However, instead of flat circular wheels with teeth on them, these gears are the Platonic solids. And when they line up, we may have the key to stargate travel far beyond the reach of our solar system, and perhaps across much larger chunks of time than just a few days here and there. In November 2010, Prince Charles released his new book, Harmony, A New Way of Looking at Our World, in which he uses Martineau's groundbreaking research to argue that the universe displays evidence of a grammar of harmony. I was captivated when I came across the work of a young geometer called John Martineau while he was studying at my School of Traditional Arts some years ago. He decided to make a close study of how the orbits of the planets relate to each other, and how the patterns that can be drawn from them fit so precisely with things made down here on Earth. He found many rather beautiful relationships. This is all pretty remarkable evidence that there is a mysterious unity in the patterns found throughout the whole of creation, from the smallest of molecules to the biggest of the planetary particles revolving around the sun. Everything depends for its stability upon an incredibly simple very elegant geometric patterning, the grammar of harmony. Kepler's vision of the planets is first discussed on page 12 of Martineau's book. Looking for a geometric or musical solution to the orbits, Kepler observed that six heliocentric planets meant five intervals. The famous geometric solution he tried was to fit the five Platonic solids between their spheres. On page 14, things get much more interesting. Kepler particularly noticed that the ratios between planets' extreme angular velocities were all harmonic intervals. Then, Martineau begins delivering the goods. Two nested pentagons define Mercury's orbital shell, 99.4%. The empty space between Mercury and Venus, 99.2%. Earth's and Mars's relative mean orbits, 99.7%. And the space between Mars and Ceres, 99.8%. Three nested pentagons define the space between Venus and Mars, 99.6%, or Ceres and Jupiter's mean orbits, 99.6%. A hidden pattern? Absolutely, yes. The five-sided pentagon is found in both the dodecahedron, with its five-sided faces, and the icosahedron, with groups of five triangles sharing common points. So we're definitely onto something. On page 20, Martineau makes the intriguing suggestion that even though the planetary orbits are elliptical, we can still study the basic proportions that hold them in place as if they were spherical. This is probably because their naturally spherical energy fields are being squeezed by the pressure and momentum of their movement through clouds of gas and dust in the galaxy. I was stunned to see that if you draw one circle for the average orbit of Mercury and put three of these circles together to make a triangle, then when you draw a circle around them, you get the orbit of Venus within 99.9%. Of course, since these are actually spheres, it's not a triangle at all. It's our classic three-sided tetrahedron, the simplest of all the Platonic solids. Then, on page 24, Martineau produces a remarkable geometric diagram of the relationship between Earth, Venus, and the Sun. Every 8 Earth years, or 13 Venusian years, they line up to form the next corner of a perfect pentagon with 99.9% precision. Even better, when we work in the nearest and farthest points Venus reaches during this 8-year dance, another pentagon is formed that is even larger and in perfect proportion to the others. This very likely is the result of Platonic geometries within spheres of energy that are precisely structuring where the planets travel. Again, in this case, thanks to the dodecahedron and icosahedron with their five-sided symmetry. On page 32, we find out that there is geometric precision between Earth and the Moon, thanks to the work of Robin Heath. There are between 12 and 13 full moons in a year. If we then draw a circle, again a sphere, with a diameter of 13 units, and inscribe a perfect five-sided star inside it, each arm of the star will measure 12.364 units. This is the exact number of full moons in a year, to a 99.95% level of accuracy. This again suggests there is a sphere of force between Earth and the Moon, where the Moon's movements are being precisely driven by the rotating vortex currents of gravity within the dodecahedron geometry, which is all based on five-fold symmetry. I was amazed when I saw pages 34 and 35, as Martineau shows that the relationships between the spacing of Venus, Earth, and Mars are all perfectly defined by the icosahedron and dodecahedron. In this case, Martineau directly names and illustrates these two geometries. Mars is obviously the farthest away of these three planets, and if you make that orbit into a perfect sphere, you can then put the sphere of Venus's orbit inside of it. The distance between the sphere of Venus and the sphere of Mars is precisely defined by the dodecahedron, with 99.98% perfection. Then, if you flip this same dodecahedron inside out to get the icosahedron, you can fit a larger sphere inside of it. And that happens to be the exact distance of Earth's orbit, within 99.9% accuracy. If the details seem confusing, you can go read the book and get into all the specifics, but these are very clear geometric relationships between the planets, just like the geometry we see in quantum mechanics and the global grid. The magic continues to happen as we go farther out. When we draw a circle for the orbit of Mars, we can then put it in the middle of a group of four larger circles that touch each other perfectly. Each of these four larger circles is precisely the size of Jupiter's average orbit, with 99.98% perfection. This obviously forms a square, which becomes a cube. So there appears to be a hidden cubical energy field between these two planets, determining the exact distance and timing of their orbits from each other. Martineau also shows a beautiful cubical relationship between Jupiter's two largest moons, Ganymede and Callisto, and also reveals a perfect cubical relationship within 99.9% by comparing the orbit of Earth and Mars. One of the biggest dead giveaways that there is geometry in the solar system is in the Trojans, which are clusters of asteroids that orbit in front of and behind Jupiter in the same loop. One cluster is always precisely 60 degrees ahead of Jupiter, and the other cluster is always 60 degrees behind Jupiter. There has never been a compelling scientific explanation of why this is happening. Obviously, this 60-degree spacing allows you to start drawing geometric patterns if you represent Jupiter's orbit as a perfect sphere. I was stunned to see that if you take the sphere of Jupiter's orbit and nest three cubes, three octahedrons, or any other combination of these two shapes together, one inside the other, you get a sphere in the center that is exactly the size of Earth's orbit, with 99.8% perfection. Then, Jupiter and Saturn have a very close 5-to-2 relationship between their orbital periods. They make a conjunction every 20 years, but each conjunction appears at a new point within the great circle of their shared orbits. If you plot out six of these conjunctions within that shared circle and connect the dots, you get a perfect Star of David. This is the geometry of the star tetrahedron, or Merkaba, where you have one tetrahedron pointing up and another one pointing down, blended together. Again, the Platonic solids are working their magic. Lastly, on pages 48 and 49, we find another triangle, or tetrahedron, in the relationship between the orbit of Uranus and Saturn. I was also intrigued that the radius of Saturn's orbit is equal to the circumference of Mars's orbit, to 99.9% accuracy. And the circumference of Saturn's orbit is the same as the diameter of Neptune's orbit. Just so Pluto doesn't feel left out, we discover on page 50 that Neptune's orbital period is twice that of Uranus, and Uranus's is 2/3 that of Pluto. That means our entire solar system is being governed by a series of absolutely perfect geometric relationships, many of which can be directly associated with the Platonic solids. As Prince Charles said, "This may, of course, all be a coincidence, but such is their precision, it does begin to challenge the popular notion that we live in an accidental universe. I was absolutely stunned. I had felt for 15 years that this must be the answer, but other books I'd read on sacred geometry seemed to suggest that Kepler's dream was ultimately a failure. Now I realized they simply hadn't worked hard enough to see the truth. But John Martineau had done his homework and figured everything out. I did already know that galaxies gathered into massive superclusters, and those superclusters mysteriously arrange into gigantic, diamond-shaped octahedrons. The octahedrons form a matrix, repeating over and over again across vast distances. The background dust and gas at the farthest reaches of the universe also clusters into the shape of an octahedron. Further analysis revealed a dodecahedron pattern in the dust as well. These laws truly do extend throughout the entire universe at all levels of size. If you're scratching your head at this point and wondering why I even bothered to mention all this, let me make myself clear. We've already seen evidence that Sanderson's 12 main vortex points create direct gateways into time-space. A huge number of ships and planes have seen strange lights appear in the sea or in the sky, had bizarre equipment malfunctions, spontaneously moved forward or backward in time, warped through space from one place to another, or simply dematerialized entirely, making a complete crossover into time-space. The key, as the ancients obviously knew, is in the geometry. Or, as the old saying goes, X marks the spot. Conjunctions become stargate portals. I now had the proof that these same three-dimensional geometric relationships existed in the planetary orbits. This meant planetary conjunctions were much more interesting than just dates on a calendar. During these alignments, gigantic interplanetary geometry is lining up as well, creating greater coherence here on Earth as all that energy multiplies. The more of an alignment you have between these hidden geometric energy patterns in the solar system, the more coherence you have, and the more likely you are to be able to directly travel through time-space. The ancients may have been very aware that at certain times, a particular geometric node on Earth would come into alignment with other geometry in the solar system, and this is when the magic happens. Then, if you've built a pyramid or even a stone circle, you can generate even more coherence, as we saw with the Russian pyramid experiments. Don't forget that when the Russians charged rocks in the pyramid and then arranged them around a growing crop, they got much more coherence in the area inside the rocks. So if you charged up the rocks that made Stonehenge, you now would get the same effect. And even if you didn't charge them up first, simply arranging them in a circle should be enough to harness and concentrate the Earth's energy by creating a circular vortex pattern. I've also heard from insider sources that these alignments are the secret to alchemy. Lead will turn into gold in certain methods, but you have to know when to do it. Only when the Earth and solar system produces the proper coherence will this ancient science of alchemit, literally the science of Egypt, actually work. A new view of the Maya calendar. The Maya were obviously a pyramid-building culture, or at least inherited all their traditions from a pyramid-building culture. I do not believe that human sacrifice had anything to do with the original founding of the Maya civilization. This represented the end result of a long period of decay, moving ever increasingly farther away from where it once started. it may well be that the ancient founders of the Maya civilization were in fact aware that you could levitate large stone blocks, teleport through space, and even travel through time when the geometry of the Earth lined up with the geometry of the solar system. It is very likely that one of the main reasons they built the pyramids was to have a coherence generator, so that when these special alignments opened up, they could harness them. Obviously, if this were true, they would be very interested in tracking the orbits of the planets with great precision. I've seen many, many skeptics stridently attack the Maya calendar as if it were a bunch of meaningless nonsense. And even when people write about it in a favorable way, suggesting that the end date of 2012 is truly a significant event, hardly anyone actually crunches the numbers within the calendar to see if they mean something. More specifically, why were the Maya counting all these different cycles that mesh together with each other so perfectly? Why not just count Earth days, lunar months, and Earth years, and leave it at that? I suspected that if I actually did the homework, I might find that the Maya were counting these cycles for a reason, and I struck gold. The Maya and many other indigenous Mesoamerican cultures gave every day a name for a total of 20 days. This 20-day period was called a vientena in many pre-Columbian Mesoamerican cultures. It was also referred to as a weenal in the Maya calendar, as well as in the Zapotec and Mixtec cultures. It seemed to serve the same basic function as a month does in our own calendar system. 18 weenals of 20 days each were counted up to get 360 days, or a tun. Then an additional 5 nameless days, called Nemontemi in many cultures and Wayeb in the Mayan calendar, were added in to get our typical 365-day Earth year. So you had 18 20-day months in a year, plus the 5 nameless days added in. This whole system of counting the Earth year was collectively known as the Hab. Interestingly, the nameless days were considered to be a dangerous time where the boundaries between the mortal realm and the underworld dissolved. Allegedly, rambunctious spirits could get through during this time and cause disasters to occur. This might be the result of a thinning of the veil between space-time and time-space, given a more supernatural explanation. It is also interesting that if the 360 days represent a perfect sphere, a harmonic geometry, then perhaps those 5 days are where we lose symmetry and the coherence is broken. The 20-day cycle was considered to be an astrology system, where each of these days had a particular character or quality to it. Their counting system also went 1 through 20, unlike our own, which only goes 1 through 10. And despite their meticulous tracking of the Hab, or solar year, they also followed other cycles at the same time. Even though they counted 20 days as the ventena, or weenal, they also gave each day a number, which they called the Tresena cycle. Strangely, these numbers only count up to 13, and then on the 14th day, you start on the number 1 again. That means that the 20-day and 13-day cycles don't line up until 260 days, or 13 times 20. This 260-day cycle was known as the Dzulkin, and it is considered the oldest and most important timing system throughout all Mesoamerican regions, appearing earlier than the very first Maya inscriptions that ever featured it.